Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Did you know that I once ran my own video production company? It was a one-man operation. It didn't last very long, but I had a lot of fun doing it. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend the truth, goodness, and beauty of the Catholic faith. But on Fridays, we get to have a little bit of fun. We cut loose. We talk about whatever I find to be interesting, though I think that any topic on Free for All Friday is going to intersect with our faith in some way, because our faith informs everything that we do, though some topics are going to be a bit more remote than others. And sometimes on Free for All Fridays, we'll talk about just obscure subjects or just fascinating trivia. Trivia is something I've always enjoyed. You know, one thing I haven't done in a while that I used to love doing? That was going out to pub trivia. You ever been out to pub trivia? If you're the kind of person who enjoys watching Jeopardy, then you'd enjoy pub trivia. You go out with a bunch of friends, they hand out little cards at your table, and someone reads, it usually takes about 2 hours in a pub or a restaurant, and they read out, questions about trivia, sports, history, arts, entertainment, typical questions you might find on Trivial Pursuit. And the goal is to assemble a team of people that can cover all the different subjects. And if you win, you usually get your tab handled for you. So I enjoy trivia, though I think today's episode, is going to be a bit more practical. I want to talk about photography, about taking pictures. It's amazing to me how even though people have a lot more opportunities to take pictures today than they did 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, people's quality of the pictures they take hasn't really improved. I'll give you an example of this. A lot of times when we go out, when we used to travel, when we travel to places, we'll go out and I'll try to take a selfie of us in front of a famous landmark, or I'll take a selfie of us in front of a beautiful locale. And someone walking by, we usually say, "Oh, can I take your picture?" And I, the typical insensitive melancholic, reflexively wants to say, "Oh no, I've got this." But my wife, who is the personable sanguine, the one who is gentle and gracious with all people, she always says, "Oh no, of course you can take our picture." And then they go and they take our picture, and I wait for them to walk away, walk around the corner, and I go and I look at the picture they've taken, and I'm like, "Oh, it's not very good. Here, I'm just going to redo it." But I wait to redo it until they're out of sight. I don't want to hurt their feelings, but I've had people take pictures of us, and I'll say, "Oh, could we get this in the background?" And they hold up our camera, and they take, has this ever happened to you? They hold up the camera, they take the picture, and they framed it so that I and Laura are blocking the thing that we wanted in the picture. I mean, I don't know. Am I being too nitpicky? I don't think I'm being nitpicky. Today, I really want to help you develop your photography skills, how to become a better photographer. And you can get really good at becoming a photographer because guess what? Odds are you probably carry a camera around with you in your pocket. That is one of the things that has really amazed me in the last 20 years, 25 years, how cameras have evolved. I mean, I remember when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, I would go to Disneyland or SeaWorld with my parents. I'd go on vacation with my parents. So that was probably in the mid-90s, late to mid-90s. In order to take pictures of things, I would go and get disposable cameras. My family actually used to have a really nice 35mm camera. And one time we went to Disneyland, I think my dad left it in the bag in a stroller. This was probably when we were really little, if we had a stroller with us for one of my younger siblings. And he left it in the bag on Splash Mountain so it wouldn't get wet. It was a really nice 35mm film camera. And we go on the ride, and then we come back, and the camera was gone. It was taken. It's just one of those family vacation memories. I mean, it's always kind of sad. I hope this doesn't happen to my children, because I try very hard, to plan out our outings, make sure they go okay. But isn't it kind of weird when you think about family vacations? A lot of times the first thing that pops in your mind is something that went wrong. Eventually, you have to learn to roll with the punches, just things will go wrong. Though actually, one of the things I remember most about when my family would take me to Disneyland, sorry to go on a trip down nostalgia lane, but Disneyland has been closed for a year. This is the closest I have to visiting Disneyland, is to go there in my own mind. We would go there, and so I was like 10, 11, 12 years old, and I had my little disposable film camera. Do you remember the Kodak disposable cameras? You would wind it, and take, I don't know, something about 24 or 26 pictures that you would take. And you could get them in double prints. You know, you could pay a little bit extra. So each picture, you could have a copy of it to give to a friend. And you would take the camera, you go down to Walgreens, go down to the pharmacy, drop it off, come back in an hour or a day. And so that was one of the first times, actually, my parents kind of let me have a lot of autonomy. Like, I think I was 10 years old and they let me, okay, here's your watch. I don't think I had a cell phone then. I didn't get a cell phone until I was in junior high. So it wasn't until I was like 12 or 13. I might have had a cell phone. I do remember before I had a cell phone, my parents gave me a walkie-talkie. So they, when I was 10 years old, they let me go around Disneyland by myself and just ride the rides that I wanted to go on. And it was a ton of fun. It was my first time just having just my own freedom. I could go to a restaurant and eat there with my money if I wanted to. And I would go and take pictures and document everything I did that day. And then when we got back from our trip, I would share it with my parents, say, hey, here are the pictures that I took. And I always tried to take really neat and interesting photos, different angles, different things in the foreground and the background. I really enjoyed photography. But I didn't end up becoming a photographer. I mean, I'm decent enough behind a still camera. But when I was in high school, when I was a sophomore in high school, so grade 10 for our European and Australian friends, when I was a sophomore, I enrolled in a class called video production. And so I enrolled in this class, and we had these little iMac editing suites, and we shot our school, the high school that I went to in Phoenix, had these actually really expensive cameras. I cannot believe they checked them out to us, but we were responsible, and they checked it out to us during the day, and we would go, and we would film things with them. They were mini DV cameras. These were cameras that had mini, they were mini digital video cassettes, so the cassette tape was very small. It could fit like in the palm of your hand. It was mini DV. And you would drop it in and it was huge. We shot with a Canon XL. It was a giant camera that you would just, it looked almost as big as one of those old Super VHS cameras. Do you remember the old Super VHS cameras? If you're the younger set listening to this podcast, you won't remember these cameras. I vaguely remember them. They were big, bulky, boxy cameras that you could drop an entire VHS cassette tape into and record onto. So we had these big Canon XL cameras. When they were brand new, when I graduated high school, I eventually bought one to do my own video production business during college. And I think I sprung, cost me with the gear and everything, about $5,000 for one of these cameras. And I used it when I was traveling through, I would travel all over the country for certain things. I used it for a lot of filming weddings. I filmed a lot of weddings, confirmations. I filmed projects for our youth group, our Catholic youth group. I would create these like really funny videos for the teachable moments in our youth nights. In fact, I'm planning maybe soon, at least in 2023, I think I might do a special series on the Patreon at trendrunpodcast.com, at least a limited run there, maybe some on my social media, of the videos I shot when I was in high school. And looking back on them, I think, oh, wow, these were actually really fun and cool. And man, I was as skinny as a rail back then. Someone should have got me a sandwich or something. But I would shoot these different kinds of videos. And now in 2023, that'll be my 20-year high school reunion. So when that comes up, I think I'll post the videos there. So during high school, I went and I shot with the Canon XL and I edited the video on a program called Final Cut Pro. And I still really enjoy Final Cut Pro. And I was hooked. I was hooked because this was a kind of art that I could do. When I was a youngin, when I was, I think it was in the third grade, I had an art teacher who told me I was bad at drawing and I couldn't draw. Yeah, great teacher, right? Because I tried to draw people and I would draw their hands. And the hands, I usually just drew like a flower, like all the fingers are the same length, even the thumb. Like, I just couldn't draw. My mind couldn't wrap me around drawing. I was bad at it. I'm still bad at it. If I try to like draw a picture for you, it just looks bad. I am not a good drawer. But when I had a video camera, when I had a still camera, I could do art because it could draw for me. My mind couldn't tell my hand how to make an image. But I knew where to point the video camera. I knew where to point the still photography camera in order to make things work. And that's where it clicked. So if there's one art that I would get involved in that I would really enjoy, it would be film, video, photography. Though I liked film and video better than photography. I loved the film and video. You combined audio, so sound, music, lighting, pictures. You combine everything into one medium, and then you go back in and you edit it, and you can create a lot of compelling and really fun things to do. So I got more into video, though I will say when I did weddings for a few years, but I stopped after a while. It was just way too much stress for me. Like, it's so much stress. It's the bride's perfect day. It's the couple's most amazing day. And if you miss something, oh, they're going to raise hell. It was too much pressure. I just couldn't handle that. Especially when it comes to video, because photography, like, if you're a photographer, you take like 80,000 pictures that day at the wedding. I really feel like the videographers have a harder time than the photographers at a wedding. If you do wedding videography or photography, feel free to disagree with me. Become a patron at trendhornpodcast.com. Leave a comment there. I would love hearing from you. But here's how I always felt. If you take the photographs, you take like, you know, 1,000 photographs that day. You go home, you download the pictures, you edit them on Adobe Photoshop, and then you submit them in a nice little album for the couple to look at. But as a videographer, you can't just pick and choose. You've got to record everything start to finish. One reason I think that I enjoy photography and feel like I can speak to photography is that videography is like photography, but just 30 times more. So when you shoot on film, a film strip is just 24 frames. If you do classic film, and I used to shoot on, I think it was 16 millimeter film. And when I went to community college, at Scottsdale Community College, I didn't graduate with an associate's in film. I got out of the film program, but I was in the film program for a while. And I created my own vintage 16 millimeter film. And it was like a 10-minute short. I called it Where's Waldo the Movie. It was a dark, gritty reboot of Where's Waldo. So if Christopher Nolan makes a dark, gritty reboot of Where's Waldo, you tell him Trent Horn is suing him for everything that he's worth. So I'm going to try to find that film and I'll post it online. But I shot it on film. Like, so it wasn't videotape. It wasn't electronic. It was reels of film that I had to load into a film camera. I had to measure, in order to make sure that it was correct, I had to measure every shot with a tape measurer and consult a chart called a depth of field chart. And that would tell me what focus setting on the ring to set the camera to when I was going to film it. Because on a film camera, you can't always trust the eyepiece you're looking at to make sure it's in focus. You actually have to measure it. So when you shoot on film, film is just 24 frames per second. It shoots, and film, when it is projected, like in an old film reel, when you show 24 pictures quickly in succession, it appears to have motion to it. Video is at a different frame rate. So film is at 24 frames per second. Video is 29.97 frames per second. Though there's other frames per second that they've developed now, 30 frames per second, 60 frames per second. If you shoot at a higher frames per second rate, that's how you can get slow motion. So if you are taking a ton of pictures of something in a short sequence of time and play them back, it appears to be going slower than it really does. And if you shoot frames less than 24 frames per second, it appears to speed things up. So I shot it on film, and I had to send that film to a company in Burbank, California. They would develop the film, then send it back to me on a digital file, they sent it back to me on a digital video cassette tape. Then I would download that into the computer, and I would edit. So I feel like I have a decent feeling when it comes to photography, because videography is photography at 24 or 30 times more. You're just taking a ton of pictures in succession. And not just that with photography. And I'm not trying to rip on my photography friends. Some of my dearest friends are professional photographers. And I do know there are unique challenges in photography that you don't have in videography, because you're taking one still image that people are going to scrutinize. Or with videography, the fact that you are moving, if you have, you know, a rough spot in the image, you're going to go right past that. So that long nostalgic story is just to say, I feel like I have a decent feel for taking pictures. And when we go out, I always love, actually, when we go out to a park or we're at amusement park or Disneyland and people say, oh, could you take our picture? And I'll say, oh, yeah, sure. And then Laura says, don't boss them around. I say, I'm not going to boss them around, but I'll say, okay, why don't you stand over here, you two bunch together, stay right there, look over here, smile, and I'll take like 9 pictures from different angles and then give the camera or the phone back to them. And they'll look at it and I make sure that they're satisfied with the product. And I feel like, hey, I helped them. I wanted to give them something that would brighten their day. Because a lot of pictures are really the same. And that is what fascinates me. Like I used to have the disposable camera. Then I carried around a digital camera in my pocket to be able to take pictures. And then although my phone was a big bulky phone that had just a green screen on it, But then eventually, my first iPhone, it had a camera attached to it, and I didn't need to take around a digital camera anymore. And now you can take pictures everywhere. People take pictures all the time. My son is really good at taking pictures. He's 6 years old. He'll take my phone and switch it over to the camera mode, and I'll watch him because I don't believe in giving kids phones without adult supervision. And he'll go and start taking pictures, and he's already got a knack for it. And he's 6 years old. But it still amazes me. People will take pictures, not necessarily that they're bad even. They're serviceable, they're passable pictures. But they're always the same picture. Laura won't mind if I say this, but I've looked at a lot of her pictures she took, especially before we were married, and they're all the same. It's like the same selfie that fills up the screen with two or three people. And Laura says, well, I don't care where we were, how the picture looks. I just like seeing me with my friends, and I know what we were doing. I don't need to have everything in the background. But you might like having things in the background. Or people will take pictures, and they always look kind of flat or boring. You may not say it's boring, but it looks flat. You look at pictures. You might say, okay, that's a neat picture. That's a neat picture. But if you go on Instagram, or if you look at pictures from people who are photographers, then you stop and you say, oh, wow, that's a great picture. But you don't notice it as much when you're just looking at regular photographs people take, because they're kind of average. They don't take risks when they're taking pictures. It's like when you eat food. Most food you eat isn't bad. It's just normal food. But when you have a really unique home-cooked meal with spices and care and original work put into the chef did, whatever it was, you're like, wow, that's really great because it's so different from what you're used to. And I think that's the case with pictures when they're done really well. So let me offer just a few tips from my experience in taking pictures, and I'll do my best to explain it to you, because obviously in a podcast, it's hard to explain taking great pictures without showing you what these pictures would look like. But I think these tips will help. But let me start with tip number one, and it's the most important one, and that is don't worry about getting the perfect picture. I want to share with you how to take great pictures, but it's always sad when I see people glued to their phones, and they're constantly taking pictures, or they're videotaping an entire scene of people having fun, and they're not entering into it. This happened to us. It didn't happen to us today, but I thought about it. So when I was recording this podcast, we're still digging out of the winter ice storm here in Texas, but the roads were passable. So we got in the van and we drove over to the park we usually go to, and we walked through the park to see the snowy trail and the creek frozen over. And it was absolutely beautiful. And I took a few pictures while we were in the woods. I spent maybe a minute taking pictures. Then I was done. Put the camera away, walked around, saw that. Went over to a hill, and there were people sledding down it. We didn't bring a sled, but we found some cardboard people had thrown away. So we went down in cardboard. And one of the families there let us borrow a cookie tin, you know, like one of those metal sheets you would bake cookies on. And actually, a cookie tin is, I mean, I'm so not a Midwestern person. I'm not someone who lives in cold weather. Maybe if you lived in cold weather, you already knew this. But it blew my mind, like, wow, a cookie tin is a really good sled, actually, if you don't happen to have a sled. And we were able to go down the hill really fast. And Matthew and Thomas loved it. And so I took out my phone, my little frozen fingers, took a few pictures of them in action. And then I put the phone right back away. And I was saying to myself, I'm only going to do this for 30 seconds, only for a minute. Because when you take yourself out of it, you're not enjoying it in that moment. Now, some people will say, put your phone away, don't take any pictures at all, just enjoy the moment. And I don't think that's good advice, because our memories are faulty. It can be hard to remember. Like, have you ever seen, it was that play by, I think it was Tennessee Williams, The Glass Menagerie. Oh, it's a beautiful play. It's one of my favorite plays. And Glass Menagerie opens with the narrator, who's one of the main characters, and he talks about how it's a memory play, and the lighting is always soft, that in your memories, when you remember things, the lighting is always softer. Watch or read The Glass Menagerie, I should actually do a Free For All Friday just on my favorite plays, so we'll get to that at some point. But our memories can distort things a little bit. That's why it's so nice to have a picture, at least a few pictures to jog your memory of an event that you were at. So I do believe it's a good thing to take pictures at special events. It's just not good to be glued to your phone and just constantly living through your phone, or you're going through an event and you're videotaping the entire thing on your phone. You don't have to do it. You're not going to go back and watch the entire video through again. But you can get a little bit of pictures, a little bit of videos. And I want to help you get some really nice ones that'll help you jog your memory. Okay, rule number two, remember the rule of thirds. When most people take photographs, they're boring because they're not balanced. They just take a picture of two people right in the dead center of the picture. They have no concern what's in the background. It's just, oh, here's two people right in the middle, and I'll take a picture, and there you go. And you've seen a million pictures like that, and it's just kind of boring. Rather, what you need to do is remember the rule of thirds. So what is this rule? When you look at a picture, you have to kind of mentally put over it a tic-tac-toe board. So, you know, two lines going down from top to bottom, two lines going down from side to side. So you can divide the picture up into nine squares, you know, like a tic-tac-toe board. And the idea here is that you want to balance a picture when you take a picture of something where maybe your main subject that you're taking a picture of is not dead set in the middle, but it's off to the side, one of the thirds, not to the extreme side of the picture. But if you lay that tic-tac-toe board over the image, then if you, instead of right dead center, if you go just a little to the left or just a little to the right, one of those tic-tac-toe lines will intersect with each other. That's ideally where the image that you're concerned about, the object you're concerned about, what's in the foreground, might be. Where the lines intersect, that's a great place to put someone's eyes, for example, when you're cropping a picture, and we'll talk about cropping a little bit later. But when you see a lot of pictures that use the rule of thirds, you'll see that if you look at it and lay the grid over it, you'll see that it's divided. If you take a picture of the sunset, the top third is the sky, the middle third is the sun going down, and the bottom third is the foreground, the water, or the landscape, you know, whatever it may be. If you have a picture of someone looking out over a vista, you know, you don't have them just right there in the middle standing looking at something. One third is them looking out on the left, is them looking out over the vista, and their eyes are going to be two lines up in the picture. So remember the tic-tac-toe board. You're on the, you have the three squares on the left. The second line up might be where their eyes are and they're looking out. And then in the other thirds, you know, we're going from left to right across the picture. You'll have the vista, the panorama expansing away from them. So I would just recommend Googling rule of thirds, look it up online, and you'll see pictures. And you'll say, oh, that's a great picture. And then they'll lay over this tic-tac-toe board over the picture, and it'll click for you. So go online, Google rule of thirds. And so you'll notice this in pictures that people take where things aren't quite right. For example, if someone takes a picture and they haven't left headroom, like the top of their head is at the top of the picture, it looks weird. You don't like looking at it. It feels like their head is up too high. It feels like their head should be down a little bit more, and so you need to leave headroom. Like, think about, like, take a picture and have the person's head be at the top of the picture, but you see, like, the rest of their body. It's weird. We don't like looking at it. But we feel a lot better when the person's eyes are about one-third down from the top of the picture and one-third over from the side of the picture. And then when we do that, we see that the subject has what's called headroom, and the picture looks a lot nicer. So when you're taking pictures, resist the urge to cram everyone together or the thing you're taking a picture of. Like, let's say it's a house or something. I'm just going to put the house right here in the middle, and there it is. And that can work sometimes, but maybe you should step off to the side and have the house or the statue or wherever it is be just a little bit off from center, and something interesting fills up the other two-thirds going from left to right, and make sure you've got balance of, you know, kind of a top, middle, and bottom when you're taking pictures. So, I mean, I'm not going to be able to explain to you how to take great pictures. What you can do is you got to go out and you got to take them with your phone camera if you have that. But look up really good pictures online and notice this composition. Now that I've told you rule of thirds, you'll start to see it in everything, and also in video, in film. People use this for balance and composition in shots. And then you have that, you'll say, oh, okay, that makes sense. So you'll see it, you'll recognize it in pictures and video and film, and then you can put it into your own works. So that's rule number two, is, you know, remember the rule of thirds. Also remember depth. So rule of thirds, we're thinking about height and width. We're thinking about, you look at a picture, you look at it from top to bottom, and we look at it from left to right. But pictures really also have depth within them. We live in a three-dimensional world, and you can capture that three-dimensional element somewhat in pictures, even though pictures are two-dimensional. I think one of the other things where pictures are really boring that people will take, it's that they're flat. Here's the classic one. We have the Christmas tree, and we line up everybody with the Christmas tree, and we've got four family members on the left and four on the right, and here we are, and you stand back and you take that picture, or you're standing next to a mural or a big banner that says Happy Birthday, And, you know, it just feels, when you look at these pictures, the way I would describe them is they're flat. They don't have an understanding of depth to them. So you can remedy that with something called depth of field. Or I'll give you an example. When I go to Disney, when I used to take my family to Disneyland back when it was open, and so we would walk in, there's always people who were taking pictures in front of the iconic Main Street train station at Disneyland. There's the big sign that says Disneyland. And people will say, oh, can you take my picture? And what they'll do is they'll walk up and stand in a line right in front of the Disneyland sign, like right in front of it, and want me to stay very far back and take their picture. And I do that because that's what they requested. And so I give them what they want. And then I ask them, hey, can I just take one more photo? And I have them walk forward to me, to walk 20 feet away from where they're standing. Because they think if they want to take a picture in front of a sign, they think, oh, I better stand right by the sign. Or I need a picture by the Christmas tree. I better stand right by the Christmas tree. No, put that into the background. So they walk 20 feet forward, 10 feet forward, 5 feet forward, whatever it is. I have the subject walk forward into the foreground. I leave the Christmas tree in the background, the Disneyland sign in the background, and then I have the subject there, but I don't stand right next to the subject. I then take 5-10 feet backwards in order to make room, and I zoom in. And so I take the camera, and I zoom in, and I put the family or the people on the left thirds. You remember rule of thirds. I'll put them on the left side of the picture. And on the right side, when I zoom in, it provides that kind of depth, but also brings the sign or the tree more into focus. So it seems like they're there next to the tree, they're there next to the sign, but it doesn't seem like a flat, boring way to do it. So this is depth of field, zoom, compression, whatever you want to call it. Try that where you have your subject, instead of standing right next to whatever, there's the background thing. Take a picture of me with my car. Take a picture of me with this sign. Don't have the person stand right next to the sign, the car, the tree, whatever it is. Have them go a few feet in front, then you go a few feet back from then, and practice zooming and compressing the images together, putting your subject, the people, like on one third of the picture, and the background, the sign, the car, whatever it is, on the other parts, the other two thirds. And I think you'll have a lot of fun doing it that way. So rule number four would be, don't shoot into the light. This is a very standard one. Unless you're a pro, unless you know what you're doing, don't shoot into the light. Don't take video into the light. Don't take a picture into the light, because what's going to happen, and this happens a lot when you take pictures outside, people don't want to stand with the sun shining on them because they're squinting and they don't want the sun on them. So you'll take a picture with the sun kind of behind the person, so it gives a shadow over their face to give them relief for their eyes. But then when you take the picture, they're kind of blacked out, or it's dark, or it doesn't look very good. You want the light to be on the person. If you shoot into the light with either video or film, it's just not going to look very good. The only exception to that is when you're trying to make a silhouette. I had a friend, actually, I saw online, he posted a picture of his wife. She was about 9 months pregnant, so very visibly pregnant. And she was standing in front of a Christmas tree. So it was in their living room. Only the Christmas tree was illuminated. And she was not standing directly in front of the tree, but she was standing a few feet in front of it. And he balanced it just right so that she was only within the confines of the Christmas tree in the frame. The tree was the only light source. And with the tree on, she formed this perfect silhouette. It was beautiful. It's a great silhouette shot. I've taken silhouette shots of other people. I make sure that they, in order to get a good silhouette shot, they block the light source. So I'm shooting right into the light source. I find it's very hard to do silhouettes with the sun because the sun is a very powerful light source. But if you do it with like the Christmas tree lights, with just a single exterior light outside with a lamp, you can get a lot of beautiful things with silhouettes if that's what you're going for. But you don't want to shoot into the light. You want the light to be your friend. But a lot of times, the lights that we try to use, artificial lights, they don't work. So that goes to rule number five. Be careful with the flash. I cannot think of any instance where flash is good at night. Flash is just awful. When you take a nighttime picture and you turn the flash on, you completely wipe out anything in the background. You might be able to see it with your eyes because your eyes are amazing. There are some cameras now that can see the world better, I guess, than our eyes, which is weird because then can we see the pictures better than the camera? But you might be able to see it in low light, but a regular camera or camera phone, when you take a picture of it, it's just not going to look good. It'll take a flash in the darkness. Your friends, your family, you take the picture of, they'll look super white and, you know, washed out, and the background won't show up at all. It's not worth it. If it's nighttime, just try to use any kind of light source that's available. A headlight from a parked car, a street lamp, whatever it may be. I don't care, but don't use the camera's flash at night. I never think, just turn on the lights if you're gonna do that. The only time where it works to use a flash would probably be during daylight. If it's a little bit darker, if it's daylight and there's still enough light, if you turn on the flash in just a place that has a little bit less light than you would prefer, the flash can kind of add to that. If it's an interior room that's kind of more dimly lit, it can help. But even then, if it's dimly lit, the flash will probably overpower it. You want the flash on your camera to be like salt. A little bit adds to the flavor, but if you just dump a whole thing of salt on, it's awful. So if you're going to use a flash, make sure you use it like salt. It just accents the natural light by 5 or 10%, not any more than that. Otherwise, it's going to wash out the picture. Rule number 6, use your phone's focus and brightening. With a lot of modern phone cameras, you can control the focus a little bit. You can kind of manually do it, or at least autofocus. If you're taking a picture and there's a background and foreground image, you can touch it on the screen and the phone will focus in on that particular part of the image to make sure you get it. Focus in on it and brighten it for you. So you can choose that and you can be cognizant of that, because sometimes you might take a picture and you say, oh, I really want the background. And if we're a little bit darker in the picture, that's okay. I want the background. Or it may be reversed. So use your phone's focus and brightening when you're taking the pictures. Okay, what else do we have here? Rule number 7, take candid photos. So a lot of the rules, and I have one more rule that's more of a technical rule, deal with where to point the camera, what kind of lighting you should use. They're very technical elements to make the picture look right. But taking great pictures is more than just a technical exercise. You have to be creative about where you point the camera. And there's millions of different ways and combinations of things you can take pictures of and where you can point the camera, what angles you point it at, but also where you take the picture from. A lot of pictures are boring because we take it from our perspective. The picture's boring because we look at it and it reminds us of a perspective we normally have, which is a perspective between, you know, 5'3" and 6'3", you know, the span of height that people have. We take most pictures standing up. So when we look at pictures, we're looking at the world from a perspective we normally see it at, our eye level perspective when we're standing. But you're free to take pictures wherever you want. When I was at the park today, we were going around, it was covered in snow. I got down, and this is a good rule with children. I got down I crouched and held the phone low and took a picture of my kids playing in the snow with the trees behind them. And so when I did that, it made the trees look really, really tall. And it made it look like my kids are kind of going into this kind of forest, this majestic forest. And it's a nice little forest, little park, but it's not like the redwoods. But it can have that feel because I took the picture very low, almost down at the ground and angled up. Or, you know, you can go out, and I think women already know this, when you take a picture and you're holding the picture up and you look down, you look extra cutesy. You know, and when girls always take selfies, they hold it up looking down at them and they make the duck face. That's rule number 7.5, no duck face. Don't pout your lips together and make a duck face. Please, please, I'm asking you in your selfies to not do that. But make them candid. So when I took the pictures, I had my kids smile, but I just wanted to see them play. And I took a picture while they're playing. And another reason a lot of our photos are kind of boring, it's the same thing. It's people standing there with their camera face, like, oh, great. You know, you're smiling. Some people are great at smiling in pictures. Other people are like Chandler Bing. There was an episode of Friends where he doesn't know how to smile for pictures. And that's how I felt for a long time until I started going out and giving public talks, because people like to take their picture with me sometimes afterwards. And so I've learned my, you know, kind of my picture face. That's how I learned a picture face. But before that, I did not know how to smile in pictures. I got nervous. I raised my eyebrows up too high. My smile was too wide. I was like, oh, I don't know how to smile. How are you people so natural and good at this? But a lot of pictures are just people looking and smiling at the camera. And that gets boring after a while. So a general underlying theme to these rules is don't be boring. Take risks. Do something different with your pictures. Angles, you know, get down, crouch low with children, take a picture up high, look at it from all different kinds of perspectives over things, have something cool in the foreground, like a little potted plant. I don't care. Some of them are going to look bad. That's how you learn. You experiment. And then when people are doing things, don't just say, hey, come here, smile. That's fine to have that every now and then. But just get a picture of your kids running around. I got a great picture of Matt just running, holding a cardboard box as a sled. And his feet were kind of in midair and he's holding the box. And that's great. People love seeing these candid photographs or smiling or talking. And that really gets us more when we look back at our pictures to look back at the memories of what we were doing. I think the candid photographs are way better at helping us to remember this. I think I jumped ahead. Rule number 8 was experiment with angles. So, you know, don't make everything from your height, from a, you know, average 5'9" height, whatever it may be. Angles, lighting, composition, just experiment and have fun. Rule number 9, then when you're done taking pictures, you might upload them to an app like Instagram or something like that. Just be subtle with the filters. Don't go overboard and completely wash it out, but, you know, just be subtle with them. When you're using Photoshop or an Instagram filter, just accent it a little. You have to treat it like salt. 5 or 10% adjustment is fine, but anything else might make it look cartoony or weird, or you just want to be subtle with that. And then finally, rule number 10, practice, practice, practice. The only way you can get good at something is to tolerate being bad at it for a while. And you could be a great photographer. Go online, look at photography 101 videos. You don't even have to take a class. I think that's such a scam, you know, to go take a class on this. And if you want to do that, that's fine. Now I'm going to get an angry email from some photography teacher. Okay, if you want to take a class, that's fine. But really, for a lot of things you want to learn about today, you can go to YouTube and you can watch hours and hours and hours of instructional video. You can get the basics down when it comes to photography. Learning how to take pictures is easy. Learning how to take great pictures takes a lot of time. But when you go out and you practice more and more, you'll get better at it. So I hope you'll do that. And I hope this will make your family memories really shine for you, or just your memories of life and the pictures that you take. But don't forget rule number 1. What was rule number 1? Enjoy the moment. Enjoy the moment. Take a few pictures to jog your memory later, but then put your camera away, put your phone away, and just enjoy the moment. That way you have a really great memory for the picture to jog later when you look at it. So, hey, I hope this is helpful for you all. Thank you all so much, and I hope that you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.